Yeah, but that's abbreviation for Kandapa. Kandapa. Abbreviation for Kandapa Maharaj, the king of arrows. And sometimes Krishna says, I have to take you to the Maharaj. Yeah. Krishna says to Radharani, oh, because you're stealing the flowers here, and I've been appointed by the Maharaj. I've been appointed by the Maharaj to punish anyone who's stealing flowers from his private garden. So when he's talking about the Maharaj, he's talking about Kandapa or Cupid. Mm. So he's saying, I'm working for the emperor, for Kandapa, and I caught you red-handed stealing flowers from his private garden. So now I have to take you to the Maharaj, and you'll receive just punishment there for stealing these flowers. So the Maharaj is actually Krishna himself. I think that's what they're speaking when they're talking about the Maharaj. Oh yeah, then definitely it's Cupid then. It's not far, it's springtime. Maharani? I can't remember Maharani. Could be Rati and Kandapa. Rati is the wife of Cupid. Cupid is attraction and Rati is attachment. So many things, right? Attraction and attachment go together. You become attracted to someone, you become attached to them. So Krishna is all attractive. So if you get attracted to Krishna, you can have all your attachment there. Because he's all attractive and all attachment. If you become attracted to Krishna, and all your attachment can be there. And all your fulfillment can be there also. You can obtain all fulfillment from Krishna. So in the material world, that's why we say Krishna is a transcendental Cupid, Kamadev. We meditate in the Gayatri Mantra, Krim Kamadevaya Vidmini. Right, the Kamadevaya, the transcendental Cupid. The transcendental Cupid is, Krishna. So in the material world, the Cupid is known as Kandarpa. Kandarpa. Or Kamadev, he's also called Kamadev. Or Panchasharal. Panchasharal means he has five arrows. He shoots the five arrows at the conditioned soul. Cupid are arrows. He shoots us with the attraction, where he attracts our eyes, attracts our nose, attracts our ears, attracts our tongue, attracts our sense of touch. And then when we follow that attraction, when we allow ourselves to be attracted by Cupid, then we become attached. A man's eyes become attracted to a woman. He looks at the woman and he becomes attached to the woman. And then, they go together. So the wife of Cupid or arrows is Rati. Right? Rati and Cupid. Rati means attachment. Attraction and attachment. So Krishna is that he's a perfection of attraction and a perfection of attachment. He's something you can really be attracted to, and you can attach to your senses. You can be attracted to Krishna, your eyes can be attracted to his beautiful form, and your eyes can get attached to looking at his beautiful form. Your nose can get attracted to Krishna, smelling his form, or at least smelling the incense and flowers that are offered to his form, and your nose can get attached to that. So attraction and attachment are within Krishna. But when it is left in this world, it comes out as Cupid and Rati. Or, man is attracted to woman, woman is attracted to man, then we can attach, and both is out of attraction. So Krishna is the equal perfection of attraction. That's why we say Krishna. Palsati means to attract, or the pulling power. But what is Krishna's attraction? He preached by his beauty. He defeated the demons by his beauty. It's so beautiful. So attractive. People just look at him. It's tremendous. Men, women, young, old, everyone. Because he imagined all the beauty of Radharani and all the beauty of Krishna in one place. You can imagine. Radharani is very beautiful. Most beautiful. And Krishna is so beautiful and attractive. You put all that, you compress the beauty of Radha and Krishna together and have the golden avatar, the prema avatar. It's beauty and mercy combined. Beauty that just overflows and attracts everyone. Because the beauty is full of mercy. Lord Chaitanya is full of mercy. His beauty extends to all the conditioned souls and captivates them and attracts them. And then we become attached to Krishna. We become attracted. First you have to become attracted to something. Attracted to it. And then, once the attraction is there, depending on the depth of the attraction, you become attached. So Krishna is known as all attractive. His name is all attractive. So if we allow ourselves to be attracted to Krishna's name, we allow our ears to be attracted to Krishna's name, then we become attached to it. Then we chant day and night like a madman. Like Lord Chaitanya, we're reading, right? And if he's in charge of Mithi, he became seen like a madman. Being so much attracted and attached to the name of the Lord, he was just chanting and chanting. And that name began to dance in the inner chambers of his heart, and it caused him to experience so many ecstasies. So Radhakund is the form of Radharani, liquid form of Radharani. When you're bathing in Radhakund, you're actually being embraced by Radharani yourself. You may not realize it, but the one devotee is saying, when I'm bathing in Radhakund, I feel so secure, so safe. I can really play there. So being surrounded by the waters of Radhakund is like the same as being surrounded by the loving embrace of Radharani. We didn't put it in our book, but we had interviewed several residents of Radhakund. Some of the statements are there. But some of them said that they feel that when they're living at Radhakund and Samarkand, they're living in a protective embrace of Radharani. And they feel that as long as they stay on the Krishna Marg, they feel that they're in a protective chakra of Radharani, that nothing will ever happen to them, they'll always be protected and always be inspired. And then we feel fast forward on the path of progress. But they say even when they have to go to Govardhan, maybe they have to go for banking or they have to go for some work or phone or some kind of work, they feel they have to go down the road to Govardhan. They feel as soon as they walk out of Radhakund and start moving away from Radhakund, they feel it. They're like losing that, they're moving out of that protective embrace of Radharani. But while they're at Radhakund and Shamakund, they feel directly as if they're in like a baby. The baby's so frightened, he's frightened, or she's frightened of some nightmare. She runs into the mother's room. What does the mother do? Just stand on and say, it's okay, everything's okay. What does the mother do? She puts her arms around him and brings him to her bosom. At least puts her arms around him. So when he's inside those arms, and the little baby, the frightened baby's inside the arms, what does he feel? He feels secure, he feels protected, he feels loved, he feels happy, safe, all those feelings. So the Parikrama Marg is like, and the Radhika is like the loving arms, the protective, sheltered arms of Radha and Krishna. Well, some of the residents are telling me like that. So it's kind of our experience also. When you go there, you feel like, you really want to leave. That's why some of them just sit in their room, I guess, and they have some disciples, and maybe they cook for themselves. And some of the more energetic types, more outward going type, like your Guru Maharaj, he likes to be the Govardhan Parikrama. And maybe for his bhav, he feels the arms of extension go all the way around the Govardhan. Or he has a different mood. But some of them I could see they feel quite content just to stay there and dive and swim in the Madhyana Ras and Madhyana Lila, Mubo pastimes of Radha Krishna. Very special place. If one is able to live in Radhakund, it's a direct favor. It's a direct mercy granted by Sri Swami. That's bestowed upon one through the mercy of their Guruji, who is a follower of Radhakund Sri Swami. Rupa Radhakund is our father, who has the opposite. They should become eager to follow in the footsteps of Rupa and Radhakund. Rupa Goswami worshipped Radhakund in the days. And he wrote so many important books. Sarvamala, Radhakrishna Dhanada Sri Kitab, Akhira Samrita, Bhakti Rasa, Vishnu, Vishnu, and Nira Mani. And I will start with him. And Dr. Swami, who wrote Mani Sutra, and Savavali, and Dhan Kodak, and Sinhamani. Vishnu Swami wrote Dhan Kodak, and Moody, and Arita Mata, the Bhajamata. Very important book. So these books are those Goswami, Rupa, and Raghunath Das. And then in this, you can send their hint into the divine pastimes of the land. So, when we're at Radhakan, we feel there's something different here and there. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely, you feel like, oh, I'm not very serious about this. Like, this is a very serious place, and actually, serious life is very serious. And these people, at least in the diary, at least a lot of the residents here, they're taking their life very seriously. Not in a very sober and controlled way, but how they came and guess they shouldn't be on their own. Samkhan Radhakan Ki Jai, Sri Yogananda Ji Jai, Sri Prabhupada Ji Jai. Basically, Radhanuga Bhakti, the primary limb of the primary practice of Radhanuga Bhakti is Lila Smaranam, where you serve the things in the mind, not necessarily done externally. Archana means deity worship. Archana Mark, there's nine forms of devotional service, so one of them is Archana. But Radhanuga Bhakti is based on the first three in a very specific way. Specific hearing, specific chanting, specific remembering along particular guidelines based on the swarupa, the realized swarupa, the practicing swarupa, the living entity. So it is a fact that generally the deity worship is not done on the path of Radha Bhakti. Or it's not emphasized and not encouraged. It's not encouraged, and certainly your own life doesn't encourage it. It discourages it. He says that it's a distraction. But that doesn't mean that it's not done. Because Das Goswami, he was certainly following the path of Radhanuga Bhakti. And he also worshipped the Govardhan Shiva, and he did certain external worship. Most of what he did with Manasi was in the mind. But he did some external worship. He was offering some food stuff, and some water, and some pulpy leaves, and like that. So it was some external. And some of the internal services also. So we see both going on. But generally someone is not, and it's kind of the bhava of the person. The person may be in the Radhanuga Bhakti, and may be performing Radhanuga Bhakti, but they have an intense desire to also worship some external. So they do that. They have a deity and they worship externally. Some things, and they do many things internally. So you can't just black and white the whole subject. I mean, this is the way it is, and this is the way it's not. In fact, her Guru Maharaj is, he's definitely practicing Radhanuga Bhakti. But he also worships here, right? Some external worship, maybe changing clothes, maybe bathing, all those things. Or you see the temples at Radhakan. They're also doing some Archana Marg, some external worship. But their Bhavatis are also practicing internal bhajan, and they're supposed to be on a path from Radhanuga Bhakti. You could say the purest form of Radhanuga Bhakti, you could say, means nothing external at all. So they're very much being kind of presenting that conception. The highest conception of Radhanuga Bhakti means just time, sit down. Accept your spiritual identity as you whatever your sarup is, and then not sarup, you run the service within the mind to the eightfold pastimes of the Lord throughout the day. Sit down your tuti. In Sanatana and Raghunath and others, they generally would chant some japa, manasik japa, or uchisik japa, out loud japa, while they were doing smaran, and that's it. The only external thing they would do is count the beads, as they say, or tell the beads. Tell the rosary or count the beads, as they say. from the Old English. He's telling on his deeds. So that's about the extent of what they'll do externally. Because their eyes are, generally their eyes are closed, and they're meditating, they're seeing their form, and they're seeing the lila songs in their mind, and they're seeing all Radha and Krishna. They're seeing the dress of Radha and Krishna, they're seeing the form of Radha and Krishna in their mind, and they're moving, and they're talking, and everything's going on. So what need is there for some external activity? Which is rather static in one sense, and you dress them, they kind of stand there, or whatever, and it's easy. It's really beautiful, but in your mind, you're always moving here and there, and just changing your dresses, and getting dressed and undressed, and bathing and not bathing, and you're decorating, and the things are washing off. It's very active, a lot of active things are going on, and dressing and going on. So they generally say that deity worship is for the beginners. So you can incorporate both, also. And basically, one's guru will guide one on all these practices, stuff like that. They'll see what the tendency and nature is of the disciple, and what their need is for cultivating their attachment to the Lord. And they will apply the appropriate instruction and direction to that disciple. One person who may say he worships deity, next person who may say don't. Because I know Satsutma Raj, when he was more aligned or more akin to the, or more favorable, I should say. So I know that he was asking about getting to go around Shiva and worshiping him, and that's what studied deep modesty. Puja. He wanted to be Puja, he wanted to be modest, but he was still in mind. That's his particular angle, the vision. And it's right. And but then some others will say, well, for some maybe he was too. Generally they say that he was just good for the Gnostic. Also, if it helps him get more peace and attraction to the bodies of each other. By touching the body of the Lord. This person you mentioned about was discouraged and duty wasn't, they were married or single? Huh? She's not married. So she was advised not to do duty with him. Right? So it's many different. So there's many different factors to determine. In spiritual matters, spiritual instructions and paths they're all very similar. It's all path of bhakti and being made of Krishna statement. But the specific application depends on the individual, very much individual. They tell the story that must be several times, like two Brahmacharis must meet Prabhupada. And they're both seemingly renounced in Brahmacharis and everything. And one Prabhupada said, you get married right away, and the other one said, you won't get married, so he's on the side. And they couldn't understand it, because neither one of them was very inclined to Prabhupada understood somehow. So they gave two different instructions to these similar types of people, same marriage and same offspring. So the disciple has faith in my guru knows, and my guru will instruct me properly. But you can understand that any great souls that are acting as gurus, that somehow they're representing Krishna. And what they're saying is true. we just have to have the maturity to be able to harmonize their instructions and understand. And of course the other point is we have to hear directly from them. Like we hear a girl said or son said or son said or girl said or son said in the line of sight. You know what I think? That often happens, but you get the line of sex. Oh yeah, maybe he said it one person. But like Prabhupada said, well, Prabhupada said, everybody should do this. But actually Prabhupada said to one person, you should do this, you should do this. And somehow it ends up that Prabhupada called everybody to do this. But he said, oh, one devotee, you should do this. And all of a sudden we're different on the mind. No, all non-sex should go out and do this. And suppose the temple is a business. And all the Brahmacharis are going after the job. And so like the wedding says, Father, you don't always honor those values, isn't it? It's just happening. Because it seems like leisure time that the wedding says you can do.
I mean, who said that?
I just always thought, you know, just come back to go to work in the business field and you can honor that. I mean, what's that? I didn't tell you, yeah. Somebody quickly drives and come back to the temple and say, you know, I honor that. So it's really important that we hear the directions directly, or the instructions directly. And that's the other point is we don't worry too much about what do they do or say or do or whatever. Make sure you admire them or expect them to do what they do. It's not important from what they say and how they understand it. They feel fortunate enough to have faith in a guru and a shelter in a guru, then we'll get all proper guidance and help from that one guru. Faith is important. It's the most important quality in the devotee is faith. You have to increase it more and more. Invest it, and increase it. And you invest your faith in someone, and then that faith increases, if it does increase. Then with that increase in faith, you invest more faith in that person. And then they reciprocate, and you feel more, and you feel an increase in faith, and you invest that. And so this way your faith increases more and more and more. What's that?
And trees and all the grass, they grow very nicely. If it's proper sun and adequate rainfall. So here, this unlimited rain is falling down, and this ground is soaked with the rain. What kind of rain is that? That rain is the actual Charanamrita from the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. So this ground is actually drenched with the special mercy of Srimati Radharani. Just as a plant, if a plant wants to grow, it needs rain. It gets nourishment from the rain. So when devotees come to Bharasana, they can get nourishment for the bhakti lata creeper. For the creeper of bhakti, they can get nourishment. So all that rain of mercy, is that this whole land, just like when it rains a lot in the monsoon time, what happens to the soil? The soil becomes saturated, becomes drenched, becomes muddy. When you walk on the soil, it's muddy, and from all the rain it's falling. So there's been so many pastimes here in Bharasana, between Radha and Krishna, and just the gopis, and with Vishnu, Kirtika, and Sridham, so many unlimited pastimes, that every inch of the soil of Bharasana is drenched with the Charanamrita of Radha and Krishna. It's completely drenched with the, and soaked with the prema of Radha and Krishna. So generally, we can appreciate that the dust of Vrindavan is something special. When Srila Prabhupada was in Hyderabad, he once asked a devotee, I think it was Madhavis and some other devotees, he said, what's the difference between the dust, this dust in Hyderabad? What is the difference between the dust in Hyderabad and the dust in Vrindavan? Devotees didn't really know so much maybe in those days, 20 years ago. And Prabhupada said, this dust in Hyderabad is just Bhumirapo Nalo Vayu Kamano Buddha Evata. It is simply the Prakriti, Vina Prakriti. It is a separated energy of the Lord. Vina Prakriti, it is the Ashta Prakriti. It is earth, it is Bhumi, it is earth, it is dust, it is dirt. But the dust of Vrindavan is Chinmaya. The dust of Vrindavan is Para Prakriti. It is transcendental. It is completely transcendental and completely conscious. The Prabhupada explained at that time that this dust of Vrindavan, because it's conscious, just like you and I are living beings, so we are conscious. We have consciousness and awareness. The dust of Vrindavan can fulfill all our desires. Whatever desire we can have can be fulfilled by this dust of Vrindavan. We're sitting on touchstone, like they have this such a substance that existed hundreds of years ago at least. We take that touchstone, it's called Sparshamani. We take the Sparshamani, sometimes they can tell me, so the Sparshamani, you take that stone and you touch it to some other thing and that thing turns to gold. We know the story Sanatana Goswami had one of those, he threw it away because he had something more valuable. He found something that would fulfill all his desires, internal, external, transcendental, material, everything. So he took the touchstone, he took the Sparshamani, he threw it in the trash can. And someone, of course, came to him and said, Sanatana, I heard you had a touchstone by which, if you have that thing, and you touch that touchstone to some other thing, you get unlimited quantities of gold. And then Sanatan said, yes, that's in the garbage. I threw it in the garbage can. It's in the trash. You can go collect it if you want. And then the person, he went and got it. He was making some gold. And then he thought, why is it that Sanatan Goswami threw this thing away? He must have something even better than a Sparshamani. Let me go inquire from him. So he went back and he asked the man, Sanatan Baba, what is it? You threw this thing away, which produces so much gold, and everyone in this material world is hankering for gold, for wealth, for money. Because with money, they think that they can fulfill all their desires and get all the things that they want. Money, and even in the West, they have expressions like this: "Money is God. God is money." Right? Just like in America, they have on the dollar, it says "In God We Trust." But actually, they don't trust in God. It's in money we trust. That's all they trust. So he asked Sanatan, what is it that you have that's more valuable than this touchstone? He said, oh, I have the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. A common sava kamova, moksha kamudari. Vivena bhakti yogena, vihetya purushantra. He said that this holy name is better than Sparshamani because it will fulfill all your desires. If you're sava kama, if you're full of material desires, or you're akama, you have no desires, you simply want to attain love of God, whatever you want, you can get from this holy name. So that Sparshamani, that transcendental holy name, is also in this transcendental Naam. You say Naam, you say the name of the Lord, you form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, and the Dham. Dham and Nam. Bhakti Sananda Saraswati says that if we develop the appreciation for the holy Dham of the Lord, then we will get a taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord. From Dham comes Nam. This is the Dham. We're sitting on the Dham, and we're chanting the Nam. But we're chanting the Nam full of offenses, because we have no appreciation or love for the holy Dham. But as we develop our appreciation and love for the holy Dham, then we'll be able to chant purely the holy names of the Lord. So this, see, every speck of dust in this place is actually Chintamani. And every speck of dust in Barshana is drenched with not only love of God, like in any place in Vrindavan, but especially soaking and dripping and drenching in the causeless mercy of Srimati Radharani, Karunamayi. She's the most merciful aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And she comes before us. She comes into this world at all times. She's always here. She's walking amongst us. She appears before us. She even meets us personally. Sometimes she even accepts us in her family. She says, please, you come in my family. And now you're in my family, I will give you a name. And now you're in my family, I will give you a place to live in my house. Now you're in my family, you have a name, you have a place to live in my house, I will give you some service. So she comes and she enters into the life of a very, very fortunate soul. She introduces herself to a very, very fortunate soul. After that soul has traveled throughout millions and millions of universes, Brahmanda Brahmate Kon Bhagyavanati, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai, Bhakti Lattavi. To receive the seed of Bhakti, you have to get it from Bhakti Devi. The queen of Bhakti is Srimati Radharani. So she appears, that appearance of Radharani in our lives to invite us into her place and to soak our souls with her prema, her varshana. This varshana means rain. That person who comes in the form of Radharani is our Sri Guru. The spiritual master is considered the representation of Sri Nityananda Prabhu and Srimati Radharani, which Srila Prabhupada writes in Adi Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So therefore, Radharani introduces herself to each one of us as a spiritual master. So that mercy of Radharani is coming to us through the mercy of the spiritual master. So here in Varsana, this ground is drenched with the causeless mercy of Srimati Radharani. And if you want prema, you have to get it by the mercy of the devotees, by the mercy of the spiritual master and the mercy of Srimati Radharani. This is the goal of our life, to attain Krishna prema. So we want to appreciate this transcendental land of Vrindavan. Just like we saw one devotee, when he came here, he started rolling in the dust. He started rolling in the dust of Pili Pukur. And some devotees were thinking, oh, that's very funny, haha. Look at that person, he doesn't know anything, he's just some crazy man. No, I would never do that. I look like, I have my very nice dhoti and my very nice sari, and I have, besides that, I have all my false prestige, and besides, I'm the temple president of XYZ Temple. And I'm a big, sannyasi, and I can't roll in this dust. I mean, that's what the dogs do, or the dogs roll in the dust, and the donkeys roll in the dust. And certainly I'm not a dog or a donkey, right? But actually, we are dogs and asses. Camels, dogs and asses. Svavidvarahushtakaya, explained in the Bhagavatam. So this dust is very purifying, just like a donkey takes a bath by rolling in the dust, like the ass or the donkey. So we need that same kind of bath. We need to roll in this dust. So at least that you can do in your own way, in your own space and time. But what we'd like to do now, with everybody's cooperation, this is a group participation, where we want everyone to take a little bit of this dust on their finger, because this dust will give prema, and we want them to take that dust and turn to the, God brother to God brother, God sister to God sister, and very lovingly and affectionately, if you have any love and affection, at least pretend, and put some of that on the forehead of your God sister and God brother and say, my dear Prabhu, I pray that you attain Krishna prema. So I pray that you attain Krishna prema. Jaya Jaya.
Yes, I pray you.
So he's been a sannyas for 15 years, and he has some temples in Andhra Pradesh where he's preaching and has disciples there, and he very much is attached to Varsana. In 1983, he had one property he donated to ISKCON. It was given to him by his disciple, and that's that we have a three-time model?
1983.
And he donated some land to ISKCON, and they built a temple over there in Andhra Pradesh. Very, very favorable to Srila Prabhupada, and he lives over here on Pili Pukur. He came with us yesterday, and he's dancing very nicely. So we're fortunate to have friendly members of Lord Yama with us.
So
this is Pili Pukur, and it's a very, very wonderful place. You can see, if you look at the color of the water, it's slightly golden, slightly yellow in color, as opposed to the Jamuna, which is very tall or very black, sham colored. The pastime about this place is very wonderful. That Srimati Radharani, she would go every day, of course, to cook for Krishna, because she received the benediction from Srivasa Muni. That anything she cooked would taste the sweetest nectar, and whoever tasted that, they would live a long, long life. And not only live a long life, but they were very healthy. Sometimes people live long life, they're sick all the time. So they have a very long life, and they have perfect health. So when Yashoda Ma heard that, she asked Vrishabhanu and Kirtidas, if Radharani could come every day and cook for Krishna. So Radharani used to go from Varsana and later from the others over to Nandagaon to cook for Krishna. Nandagaon is towards north of here. Of course, yeah. Let me just finish this one. So, and then of course when Radharani went to Varsana every day, Mother Yashoda was so happy when she would see Radharani, because she would see Radharani just like her own daughter. She would have as much Vatsalya Bhava or parental affection for Radharani as she had for Krishna. And she would, when Radharani would come, Radharani would make pay her obeisances to Mother Yashoda and touch her feet, and then with her permission go into the kitchen to be in cooking for Krishna. And then every time Mother Yashoda saw Radharani, she would start crying, and milk would pour from her breast, and she would think, such a wonderful girl. She has such charming qualities. She's so chaste and so humble and so shy. She's so beautiful. I wish upon wishes that someday, maybe when she grows up, she's old enough and Krishna's old enough, that she could become my daughter-in-law, and she would marry Krishna. She used to think like this, and this thought sometimes would overwhelm her. So one particular day, she was overwhelmed with the idea, although Radharani was a very young girl. So she went and she took some turmeric, this yellow paste that we, you know, cook with turmeric. And just in a mood of ecstasy and happiness, absorbed in this idea, how wonderful it would be, how nice it would be to have Radharani. You can see, when you get married in Indian house and Indian customs, then the daughter goes to live with the husband. So Mother Yashoda is thinking, oh, what a wonderful arrangement. Because if Krishna marries Radharani, what does that mean? That means Radharani will be in the house. She'll come to Nandagaon to live here. And I'll get to see her all the time, every day. So she was thinking how wonderful that would be. So then, of course, she took this turmeric and she rubbed it all over Radharani's hands. Radharani was a little surprised and a little embarrassed, and she didn't know what to do. Because in Indian customs, this is one of the final acts that are done to confirm the actual betrothal between a boy and a girl. First, the parents meet, they discuss the feasibility of giving their daughter and son in marriage, and then they decide, they consult astrologers, and so many things go on. And then when the final confirmation acts that they do is that the girl's hands are, they rub this yellow turmeric on. And of course, it stains the hands. I don't know if you ever deal with fresh turmeric. It's very, very, like this turmeric looks like a ginger root. Very, very powerful color. Stays on your fingers for days. When Radharani saw that, she had to come back to Bharatana. And of course, she was very, very afraid because Radharani's quality, she's very shy and she's very chaste and always acting very properly, at least and before the general public. She had this idea. So she said, what do I do about it? If anyone sees me with this yellow on my hands, they're going to think that I'm betrothed and I'm about to get married. What to do? So she's very, very frightened. So she came here, right below the hill. Her palace, of course, is up on the hill, and she looked all around. She didn't see anyone. She said, oh, here's the, I can wash my hands here. So she went down, she took the clay from the bank, and then she rubbed her hands with the clay, and rubbed her hands in the water, trying to get the yellow turmeric off her hands so no one could detect that she was somehow betrothed secretly to Krishna. But as the pastime flows, some people were here with their cows or just moving here and there. And they saw that Radharani was washing her hands, and that the whole kund turned yellow. The entire kund turned this kind of golden yellow. And people saw, oh, Radharani's hand, she must have been betrothed, and it must be Krishna because she just came back from Nandagaon. So she must be, I guess she's going to marry Krishna. What a wonderful thing. So everyone, the word started spreading because you know how fast rumors can spread. Just like they say, you know, nowadays they have comm messages, and they have email, and they have all these kinds of internet. Which is a very fast way of communication. But a much faster way of communication is simply say something in ISKCON. Start a rumor in ISKCON, it will go even faster than email, faster than comm, faster than anything. So the fastest way to spread news is just start some rumor in ISKCON. Did you know that so-and-so did this? Really? And immediately, within 1 second, it's all over 7 continents and, you know, the whole world. Like that, in the village is also like that, the village grapevine, they call it. So some people saw, within a few seconds, the message ran up to the top of the hill, and they told Vrishabhanu, and Chitika, and Sridham, and Anangamanji, and all the family members of Radharani. Oh, guess what, Radharani, she showed to Krishna. Yes, really? Oh, how wonderful, we wanted nothing more than that. Because Vrishabhanu was always thinking that my Radharani is going all the time to Krishna's house, and when she comes back from there, every day when Radharani comes back from Nandagaon, she's so happy. Before she leaves the house in Varsana, she's in anxiety, and I see her face is a little long, and she's feeling a little upset, because the father can know the nature of the daughter, because the daughter's mind is reflected in the heart of the father. So the father is very much in tune with the daughter, just as the mother is in tune with the son. So he was thinking, my daughter, Radharani, in the morning before she goes, 5:36, she's waking up. She doesn't seem very happy. But when she comes back, after Pratak Leela, she comes back at 8:30 or so for Nandagaon, after she's cooked for Krishna, and of course, after Gupta Kund, which of course, Vrishabhanu doesn't know about that. But all he knows is she comes back from Nandagaon, and she's very, very, very happy. She's smiling and kicking her heels and singing and all the things that people do when they're happy, whistling, singing. So Vrishabhanu is thinking, every time she comes back from Nandagaon, where Krishna lives, she's so happy and so joyful and so, feeling so wonderful. She must be having some nice experience there by cooking for Krishna and seeing him. Wouldn't it be nice if she was to live there all the time? She would always be happy. Because a genuine father is always concerned for the happiness of his daughter. So when Vrishabhanu heard the news that Radharani's hands were yellow and that somehow some marriage was arranged, he was very happy. So immediately they started organizing the whole village, started to prepare for the festivities of marriage. And of course, another one of the rituals they do is they send a gift. The bride's parents, they send a big tray, depending on their position, they send a big tray of jewels. So he sent all these emeralds and pearls set in gold and diamonds and all wonderful jewels and bracelets and necklaces as a gift for the groom. For Yashoda Nanda Baba. So that, of course, went to Nandagaon, when they received that, and a messenger came and said, yes, this is coming from Rishabhanu, he's accepting your proposal for marriage. Of course, none of us didn't know anything about it. But when he heard that, oh, really? Oh, so Radharani's going to marry? And then Mother Yashoda heard that, and she was very happy, and they started making all arrangements for the marriage, and the whole village of Nandagaon, everybody was singing and decorating with garlands everywhere and banners, and everyone's very excited about the upcoming marriage of Radharani and Krishna. But Yashoda and Nanda were a little disturbed because they were thinking, we have to reciprocate with Rishabhanu and send some gifts back to him, but we don't have so much opulence, because Rishabhanu was actually very, very wealthy. And so we have cows and ghee and butter and all these things, but we don't have so many costly, valuable jewels as he sent us. What to do? But they were a little distressed and anxiety like that. And Krishna, his nature is, he never likes to see his loving servants in anxiety. Maybe he puts us in some anxiety to increase our love. But when our love becomes pure, when our love becomes intense and fully transcendental, then Krishna becomes very much concerned how we are feeling, how are we. He doesn't like to put us too much anxiety. Maybe anxiety is there in the beginning for purification, for elevation and realization. Sometimes because we have an artist, we don't have much love or affection for Krishna. But in the case of Nanda and Yashoda, Krishna saw they were in distress. So he immediately thought how to relieve their distress. Because they were worried, we don't have any proper jewels to reciprocate with Rishabhanu's offer, and when they felt a little embarrassed. So then when Nanda and Yashoda became absorbed entertaining and greeting all the house guests that were coming all over from Nandagaon and all the neighboring villages, they were coming up to see Nanda Baba and congratulate him and bring different presents. Krishna grabbed all those jewels that Rishabhanu had sent to Nanda, and he ran out in the back down the hill of Nandagaon to the plowed field, and he cast all those jewels in the field, just like he had seen Nanda Baba throw seeds or broadcast seeds into the field to grow crops. He threw the emeralds and the pearls and everything into the field, thinking that yes, they will grow into plants and we'll get lots of pearls, we'll harvest so many pearls and emeralds and jewels, and then we can send those back to Rishabhanu and my father will be happy and everything will be nice. So then Nanda Baba came to look at those jewels and he saw they were all gone. He said, what happened? And Krishna said, I threw them in the fields. I went to plant them. Nanda Baba said, you can't do that. How can you grow jewels from the ground? It's not possible. Anyway, they went out to the fields, and much to their surprise, they saw that all these plants had already grown out of the ground. And there were hundreds and hundreds of pearls.